Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. I am Shane Bacon, joined, as always, by Max Homa. Max, you are in the same state as me right now. We're both in Connecticut. That's a rare thing. We don't typically hang out in the same states these days.
It feels nice. I feel the buzz. The boys are back and they're buzzing.
Hey, I got to bring up something before we get into everything that happened last week into this week. I'm noticing a new Max Homa trend. You're replying a lot with the handshake emoji. Is this a concentrated thing you're doing? I've been getting a lot of the handshakes from you over the last few days. What's that about? Is that just a new Max thing?
Yeah, I feel like back in I don't know, March, April, May area, I just realized the value of that emoji. I feel like it looks cool, but it's also like, yeah, you could use it for like, okay, like, you know, agreed. You could use it for,
I just feel like a lot of, like, it's a
versatile emoji.
Gotcha.
So maybe it's my new thing.
Yeah, I like it. I'm going to start. I might steal it from you. Before we get into golf, I wanted to ask you this as well. We're both big basketball guys. Can we get a finals prediction from you as we sit here in the conference finals?
Yeah, it's Suns-Bucks, and it does feel like the Suns are going to win if Chris Paul can stay out of COVID protocol. They feel like the team that just has all the momentum in the world. I'm sure the Bucks are better than them. There's a possibility that the Bucks are better, but they're just, you know, they're on a... They got a vibe going on ever since they won those 10 games in a row in the bubble last year. I just feel like they have everything going for them. They win a game last night that they, you know, it just seemed like it was dead, 0.8 seconds left. Is there a worse nickname than Playoff P?
So bad. So many ways you can go with it. PU. I saw Cousin Sal, who does a lot of stuff with The Ringer, was Playoff PU is what he's calling him, which really makes me laugh. It's really funny. The missed free throws. So I traveled home Monday. We did a golf today from Torrey from the live from set on Monday. It was super, really fun. If you ever want to fly coach with a two-year-old, let me just tell you. And you're on the flight with all these work people because everybody's basically taking the same flight, San Diego to New York. So you've got to kind of be a little bit of a better version than yourself, you know, because you're kind of like around work people. And so, like, you know, I mean, listen, Henry was an MVP on that flight. Both flights, mind you, he didn't really fuss that much. He was awesome. Cindy and I were very proud of him. We gave him a lot of compliments, most of which he doesn't understand. But we learned a lot of things I can pass along to you at some point once you guys have a child. Less snacks, more blankets and pillows would be probably the first thing we brought, about 800 snacks, unnecessary. But all in all, got home. But so I get home at, like, I probably pulled in the driveway at 1 a.m., you know, again, with a two-year-old and Cindy and I are pretty exhausted. And last night, I am just toast yesterday, like just so tired on Monday, been a long week. And I kept telling myself, I'm going to stay up. And I stayed up for the whole Suns game. Thank God I did, because that was as exciting a finish as I can remember. Yeah. Now, there was also a lot of replay. So can I ask you this? And I know it's been a long time going back to when this happened, but would it just be better with no replay and we just basically say human error is human error, or is replay better?
Every sport, I feel like, without replay is actually better in a way. I guess, you know, 2020 hindsight, but I appreciate the flow of the game more than I do like it being perfectly accurate.
Agreed.
We're gonna argue
totally
about stuff
agree.
Anyway, so like we could just argue about it. My biggest beef is in baseball, like when the guy slides and maybe the you know, second baseman misses the tag by like a millimeter or whatever, but he was there way, way, way before. And it's kind of like the old rule with, there's used to be like one of those unwritten rules of baseball, but when they're turning a double play and like the shortstop comes running over, he didn't really ever have to, quote unquote, like touch second base.
Right.
It was really just like to drag your foot and throw. And now like all of that's gone out the window. And like, I guess the point is like, you're out, man. Like you're way late, you know, you unless you do some cool spin move where it's obvious you're a swim move where it's obvious you made it to the bag first, like you should be out, like whatever. And You can argue that so you're blue in the face, I guess, both sides, but it's just slowing down too much and it's becoming absurd. And I like human error is going to happen anyways, because the other problem is there's, you know, times where you can't challenge things in certain sports
that are
like,
obvious,
or there's things
right.
you can't challenge. So it's like, what if we're going to have human error, let's have it all across the board, I guess. And I'm with you. I think it sounds like such a great idea, and it's just not, in my opinion. I mean, it might be the lesser two evils, or maybe it's just slightly the greater of two evils. So I guess we're splitting hairs doing this now, but I just really think it slows down the games. And I mean, shoot, even if you're at an arena, not that, you know, I go to like that many sporting events, but if you're there, you don't even get to watch the replay really, unless you have a great view of the Jumbotron and can see it. So it's like, you don't even really know what's happening. You're just like, you're like texting your buddies. You're going on Twitter trying to figure out what the call is. And, you know, if it looks viable that they were wrong, you know, it's just like, I don't know. The flow of the game is, you know, in a sport like golf that is slow, but it does kind of continue moving. When you get the long rules officials over, like that doesn't happen very much. So like, I just feel like it does keep progressing. And in basketball, especially, it's like those last 2 minutes, you replay everything and you review everything. And we got to make sure this is perfect and that is perfect. And it's like, I don't know if it's the way we should be going, but we're here now. And I think it's probably here to stay.
I know. I don't think we're going to take steps back, but I sure wish we would. Somebody last night, I don't remember who it was, wrote on Twitter. I think I sent it to you guys. They said, I love watching my favorite sport from a small screen I can't see, you know, basically the replay screen. Yeah. And I mean, I just feel like that's what it's kind of turned into. And it's an easy thing to pile on right now, but it's just, I never enjoy it. I don't enjoy it during the regular season and football. I'm okay if half of his foot was out of bounds and they called it in. It's like, that's fine with me. It doesn't bother me. Tennis, I mean, slow down, watch the replay there. Well, I don't know.
There's a Giannis play last week where he caught it deep or put back or something, and like they was on every highlight reel going, he like dunks it, whatever, it was a cool play. And when you watch it again, he's like, oh man, he traveled real bad. Like he tried to do a drop step, and when he did it, he missed the guy, so he took two more steps, his pivot foot kind of came up, and he dunked. And it's this cool play, and I'm watching it over and over and over again, but I'm like, can't stop looking at, oh, you traveled. So now we're almost like glorifying this play, knowing that we have, you know, reviews and replay, and it's like, well, you can't, you know, review that. So we're just going to, you know, praise this play that was against the rules. So it's like, what are we doing?
What are we doing seems to be the question. We are 7 minutes into the podcast and haven't talked about golf yet, so we should probably eventually get to that. U.S. Open last week, Torrey Pines, John Rahm won. I got to say, one of my favorite tweets of the week is I gave somebody, I think it was Mackenzie Hughes, had played like 11, 12, 13, incredibly well through the first three rounds, and you respond that at me next time. Those were my holes on Featured Hole coverage. Max, one of the hardest parts of my job is when I'm calling golf and you're involved, because I don't know to be like, am I like super professional, which feels like the play, but then I'm kind of losing like maybe an edge I have. You come to that stretch on Friday and you're playing out of your mind, like one of the great rounds on the day, and that's the hardest stretch on the golf course. And you get to 13, and here's my first hot take of the week, Max. 13, I watched most of the golf played on that par 5 this week, and it's one of my least favorite major championship holes I've ever watched. How different is 13 this past week than what it plays like during the Farmers? Because it doesn't ever feel like it's an issue during the Farmers.
So I think it is. Now, we did use the very, very – so they added a tee a couple years ago, maybe more. And it's way further back. But then there's another tee that's right behind that tee, you know, like 15 more yards. It's nothing. It's almost like one long tee box. So we used the very, very back tee both days I played. And I know they moved it up. I had lunch with Mackenzie Hughes today, and he was telling me about, you know, Sunday. And he said they moved that tee up a bit. And he thought it was much better. And I played there a couple years ago, maybe, or maybe I was – we were there, and I think I was talking to Phil Mickelson about it, and I was just pointing out that how much I hate the back tee. Like any of the, like, I think it should be reachable for the, in, as you know, as much as the field as possible. Obviously, there's always going to be guys that can't get there, and that's okay. I mean, you'd rather everybody, but I mean, I wanted to play more like 18, with a little bit of longer club in. So in the Farmers, I think this year, maybe the year prior, like it was up far enough where if I hit a really good drive and like I'm a little bit above average in length, I could get like a 3-iron. And some of the longer guys were probably hitting 4 or 5 and then, you know, 3-wood or hybrid, maybe like for the rest of the field. Then you add this, and I think I was talking to Phil and I was like, hey man, like this back tee's awful. In 08, Tiger and Westwood had a chance to go for the green because it was shorter and they both snipe hooked it into the shit on the left. And it caused a bunch of drama because it gave Rock, in my opinion, it gave Rocco a chance all of a sudden.
Right.
He, not saying he was dead, but like Tiger Woods in the height of his career. And I would imagine even if he was able to play now, if that hole's not reachable, that guy does not make bogey on that hole ever. He is too good at that stuff. Yet all of a sudden you have this chance, like maybe I can get it there. And he took it on and hooked it. And I like it when you can get it there in two. The problem is this back tee, the 1%, 2% of the PGA Tour can fly the left bunkers. So my fairway feels very small. Xander, who is, by the way, absolutely freaking bombing it right now, is able to fly that bunker.
Like longer than before?
Dude, he's hitting it the furthest I've ever seen him hit it. He's driving it really straight. So he pulled it a little that day, the first day, at least on Thursday, and it flies the bunker and he ends up getting there in two. Awesome two shots. Like I'm not discrediting that at all. I pull my tee shot a little bit and it came out a little low, but I smashed it, but it did not fly the bunker. So now I lay up with a pitching wedge out of the bunker. I'm 9-iron in. All good, whatever. Like I don't like, but I'm just saying I don't like the hole because then on Friday I can't really fly the bunker. Joe tells me to try to smash it to get it over it. I block a little. It's in the right rough, totally fine. I'm right next to Xander. Phil flew the bunker on the left and you know was able to kind of get it up by the green. However, now all of a sudden, like when you use that back tee, you have like 75% of the field, I would guess, can't get there in two. So now you're just playing a layup game and it's a blind layup. It's the worst layup of the year, in my opinion, on par fives. Like you can't see anything. It banks way to the left. Like there's no, it's dumb. And then if you miss that fairway, which you should hit, but when you miss like a blind fairway, it always just feels like, come on, like, you know, like we don't miss fairways from with, you know, 20 yards of fairway with a layup.
Yeah, you're hitting, so what you lay up with, like, did you lay up with like an 7-iron? Yeah, exactly. You're not missing a 7-iron 30 yards.
Yeah, you're not going to miss it. Now, I get it. Like, it makes it harder, but is that the way we want to make it harder? Whatever. It causes entertainment, but I just think that it's so much more entertaining when you can get there because the second shot is hard and it really matters where you leave it. Like, it completely matters where you leave it. You can still make bogeys from that back bunker even if you got there in two, I bet. Like, if you get on the downslope, it becomes hard to hit the green. So I just don't, I do not understand. Now, again, on Sunday, Max said that they moved it up, so it was, you know, made it reachable. So I like that so much more because I just think that, you know, Rory hit two great shots and you know, hits a 5-wood or whatever onto the green. It looks easy, and Bryson misses the fairway twice, and it looks impossible. And that's kind of what I did. I just don't get it. I think that course has this ninth hole is shouldn't be reachable unless you are someone who's super long, maybe. But that hole is dead straight 600 yards, and it should just be like, can you hit 2 to 3 good shots around the, you know, and keep it in the fairway. And there is, you know, Mackenzie actually made a great point. They shaved the back of that ninth green. So I'll even say that one now should be reachable because you want people to get back there. And we're never going to hit it back there with a wedge, really. Like, it's going to happen once in a blue moon.
Right.
So it's like, if you're going to make that change of the course, you need to make that hole reachable, which he said that he said they did on Sunday, which is cool. And then obviously 13, but I just don't like that hole because of what I know it can play like when you can get there. I think it's just 100 times better. It's not easy. It's even as like a 550 par five, it's still demanding. It's still an awkward tee shot, but the way it's laid out right now, when it's all the way back, it either favors the mega, mega bomber, or it just puts too much emphasis on, you know, for the shorter guys. And like, you know, even like in my like ballpark, like I'm kind of aiming at the right rough because I can't, when I hit in that bunker, I'm laying up with a pitching wedge. Like now I have this awkward 9-iron off a downslope, and it's like, man, what are we? This is so, it just feels dumb.
It didn't feel like you got rewarded. That was my biggest takeaway. I mean, like I said, I watched, you know, most of the golf played through that hole all week long. On Saturday, Koepka got it on the green in two. It took basically landed into that grass lip on the right to shoot it up to have it soft enough to land. I think this might have been on Friday. Correct me if I'm wrong here on Phil Mickelson, but Phil had a good tee shot. I think he ripped like hybrid at the green. It came up about 2 yards short of being perfect and rolls all the way back down where all the layups are. And then you're playing the am I going to be in a divot or not game, which seems like way too much luck involved in terms of what you want out of a par five. We saw what happened with Bryson when his rolled back down into a divot. And then I think he made six or seven there. And then on Sunday, you know, Rory hits it on the green and he landed it. I mean, I'm telling you, the area to land that on, could get it and play was like 3x3. I mean, I'm watching good golf shots go back 70 yards. And that was my biggest issue with it, Max, was that I never saw anybody rewarded there. You know, it was either you got lucky and then maybe you can make five and you'll have a 10-footer for four, or you just got absolutely dikembe'd. And we saw it throughout the week. Any golf shot that was even remotely close to that slope comes back down. And I mean, it ruined Morikawa's chances. Bryson was ejected there. And, you know, I mean, Morikawa played the hole bad, but it didn't really seem like anybody could make three. That was my problem, is I feel like late in a U.S. Open, you've got two par fives, which is very unique on the second nine of a U.S. Open golf course. When we played at 08, one of the moments of the whole championship was Tiger making eagle there, you know, and I just didn't feel like that was an option for any of you guys.
If only a handful of people can get there in two, it's not on a hole that looks like it should. Like I said, if nine doesn't look like it should be available to get two and two. So if you get two up there, then like you're just Hercules, right? But 13 looks like, and from past experience, that's where a lot of tournaments have turned with an eagle or something on that hole. If way less than half the field can even get there in two with two good pokes, then it should never be that far back, because it's not a green that was really like, it's not a hole that's very fun to watch the layup than the third shot. It's a hole that's pretty fun to watch the second shot if you have half a chance of hitting the green. But when you can't really get it there, it's just like, what? I just don't understand it. Then it makes the tee shot kind of irrelevant.
Right.
And it makes the layup like way too heightened for a bad layup hole, in my opinion. It's Joe and I always talk about, we hate blind shots, but we really hate blind layups. It feels cheesy in a way. It feels like a weak way to make a hole harder.
Interesting. I like Morikawa kind of whiffed his tee shot on Sunday. I know you're watching, but he kind of whiffed his tee shot. I don't know if there was so much going on. I don't know if it was kind of seen. I know obviously we had it on featured holes, but you know, he had 318 and left in. And I was thinking to myself, I'm working with Trevor Immelman, and I'm thinking to myself, this is probably a good thing that he whiffed it, because it's an auto layup. And then of course he pulls three wood. I don't really know where he was trying to go with it, but he pulls three wood from 318 in. And I'm assuming he's trying to run it up as far as he can. But the problem is that slope brings it back. But yeah, here's what's funny too. And I'd like your thoughts on this as a player. There are holes sometimes that like when I watch Grand Slam tennis, especially late into a Grand Slam, and there's a guy like a Djokovic or, you know, a Nadal or whomever at the net, and a ball clips the net, it's like they forget how to play tennis, because they're so used to knowing exactly where the ball's going to be, exactly where it's going to hit on the racket, and it's like it'll just barely clip the net, and, you know, they kind of flail their arms and they don't know how to hit the shot. And that hole, to me, it was like every professional golfer had no idea what to do. And when that's the case, it seems confusing. Now, that is us bagging on Torrey one hole. So I'll give you a chance to kind of speak on the golf course as a whole in general. How was it? Because obviously there were people that liked to bag on Torrey. There were people that were defending Torrey as a U.S. Open golf course. Kind of what was your thoughts early in the week, throughout the week, as you watched it on Sunday? Kind of what were your thoughts on it as a championship course?
Yeah, so I've thought about a lot about this weekend watching. I love Torrey Pines. But granted, I only play there in like competition. So I was trying to understand, and I do understand, like the Architect Junkies, rightfully so, like I guess with what they've been given on that piece of property, it could be a better golf course, a better layout. I do think that it becomes super redundant. A lot of the holes feel the same, you know, like if you know, you get four downwind and it was playing really easy, but then you get five into the wind, it's playing really hard. I've played it the opposite more of my career, and five feels quite easy, but four feels like a nightmare. And so I get it. Like a lot of the holes feel the same. However, I learned this from like DJ Pie and the No Laying Up guys. And I use them just as an example because, they also are people who don't love the golf course and whatever. That's fine. But they talk about professional golf being an entertainment product and we are just supposed to entertain. And what I will say about at Torrey Pines, I think totally because of the finish and like 80% because of how good 18 is, how fun 18 is, it will always be entertaining. Literally anything can happen with like five holes to go, as we saw. I mean, Bryson didn't even sniff winning and I thought he was the odds on favorite with, you know, nine holes to go.
Exactly. I mean, he's on 10T leading the US Open, you know, with what? With eight holes to play or whatever.
So at what point do we look at the golf course and think, man, yeah, it's an entertainment product. And this golf course does that. Like it doesn't allow people to separate really too often because again, it is kind of redundant. You're going to make bogeys and you're not going to make a ton of birdies. So it's like, it's hard to run, but it's going to give you the exciting finish. I get that, you know, Thursday through Saturday then wouldn't be insanely exciting. Maybe Saturday a bit more because, you know, so much jockeying at the end of a round is quite fun going into Sunday. So I get that, but the end, like the climax of the tournament will almost always be super cool. And like, so I give it that. I like the course because I think it is challenging. I think it challenges most of your game. I don't love all the long rough right around the greens, just because I like was kind of noticing that, if you hit the fairway or you hit the first cutter, you have a good lie in the rough or something and you could, with how firm it was, and you could run it up. You're better off just smashing it at the middle of the green and just going just long because it's not going to run. And then chipping your way, because the thing is if you had a bad lie in the rough, you had to lay up and it felt like it was almost a whole shot penalty to have a bad lie versus a good lie. It's a municipal golf course, so the rough is not uniform. So that's more where I see it. Like if it was everybody's missing the fairways, going to have a hard time getting the green, then I'd be a little bit more down with it. But at this point, it was kind of like get lucky in the rough and then you could get it up by the green and not really worry where it goes because it just can't get away from you. So that's a bit of something I would like to change. But other than that, like it just challenges your bunker game has to be good because there's a lot of bunkers. You have to drive the ball well. It is probably the most mid to long irons we hit for a whole week, you know, like that's pretty cool.
Right.
It's got like the 11th hole, I think, is awesome. I mean, it's really demanding. It's got a lot of hard. It's got a couple easy. And I think that's great. I think you do need to, especially when it's firm, you need to work the ball into the greens, which is fun. There's slope in the greens. It's hard to putt Poana. So I like all of that. I think there's obviously in most any course I played, you could tweak some things. I think the biggest beef people have with Torrey at a major with its redundancy is that I do think there is a mystique of playing major championships.
Definitely
where the golf
agree.
Course is different every yep. year other than Augusta. So I think the problem is we see this course. So it's like we know it. And it's like I kind of like learning the course, not knowing that 11th or 13th coming and it's going to be wonky. Like I feel like we've maybe been on it too much. So like, I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. But again, I like the golf course. Again, you pick little things apart. But I think it's overall good. It does what it's supposed to in a championship or a tournament. Like it is challenging the players and it is rewarding the best players that week. And again, if that's what we're going off of for like as the saying goes, the entertainment product, then I think it does a great job.
I'm with you on a lot of the holes. I heard and listened to a lot of podcasts throughout the week. I mean, I was consuming Shotgun Start and No Laying Up pretty much every evening. And I think one thing everybody could do is maybe wait until Saturday evening for their takes, because golf's on all Thursday, all Friday for hours on hours on hours on end. And at times the golf can be boring because you don't have either guys playing well or the players you're hoping to watch out there. You don't have the leaders out there because obviously that's not going to happen until Saturday and Sunday. It feels like every major that we're not in love with early on is only going to get better as the week goes on, you know, because it's going to be more exciting as we get closer to Saturday and Sunday. I really struggle, Max, with does the golf course have to be awesome, you know, for a major to be awesome? Because I don't think those two things need to align. I mean, I think you can have an okay golf course and have an awesome major championship and still think the golf course could improve. I'm with you. Like 11 is great. It reminds me of 17 at Bay Hill in a way. It's like a long iron and you've got to hit a good shot. And at times a good shot's 30 feet. You know, it's not, you're not going to hit it to 2 feet, you know, and that's kind of part of that US Open taking your medicine. part of it, but the finish is fun. 16's hard. You got to get up there and hit a shot. 17, you can make a birdie, but you can make five. 18 is 18. Like, that's what you want.
Yeah, I think 17 is like the sneaky best hole. I think that is what the golf course could have more of, I guess. But I also do think that is available on a lot of holes, and it shows itself on 17 probably best. That like, it is a demanding tee shot, and if you bail, you will have a hard time making par almost every time. But if you hit a good one, you really will have a good look at birdie, because it's not a particularly hard second shot. They have enough of those holes. They have a good amount of those holes. Like, again, if when five is downwind, that's how it feels. This week when four was downwind, that's how it felt. So I think it has a lot of that. It's just, again, there's a lot of 440 yard par fours that look kind of similar. So I think that doesn't help its case.
Yeah. It you do drive around at times and you're kind of thinking to yourself, I think this is seven. I think this is 11. Yeah, exactly. I think this is 14. Like, I'm not 100% sure. I do run into that a little bit more than I do at some other, US Open or major championship golf courses. But in terms of the view and the close and entertainment, you know, it's done its job. I mean, it's been two extremely entertaining U.S. Opens, and if you go two for two, you're going to get a third. I think that's pretty simple formula. Hey, how you were talking about Xander's distance. What's Phil hitting it like in terms of distance right now at 51?
Really far, that two woody hits or whatever. Yeah. Had a couple that got out there past my driver. I would say that when he hit his cut, I got my driver considerably past his two wood. His driver though is really far. He had a couple. They were way in front of me on a few holes. Although I will say I drove it well accuracy wise. First day I didn't hit it out of the middle a ton, but the second day I drove it really well, and I kind of kept up with him on like 15. But he hits these. His carry is really long. Like, his carry is probably somewhat similar to where Xander's carries. Xander's comes out a bit flatter, so I felt like when his was hitting the ground, it was just going.
Okay.
So he's kind of getting the double benefit of that. But Phil is smashing it, and it is wildly impressive. But I, you know, when he was playing the driver, the actual driver, he was swinging at it real hard. When he does the two wood, he's definitely coasting on it a lot more. I think that's why, you know, he's kind of using it, because he tones it back a shade, and it was impressive. I mean, I don't think he hit it amazing the 2 days we played, but you know, when you add in his short game and his putting and all that, like, I mean, he's it's just hard for him to make a lot of bogeys, which is, you know, that's like really fun to watch and learn from Phil. But speaking of Xander, dude, like that kid is so freaking good. I wish people understood. I did a dumb thing and, like, you know, kind of was reading comments about him, about, you know, how he doesn't close or whatever. And it's just like, it's kind of tough, because Rahm hadn't closed either. I know he's a little younger, but he's been out here longer. And it's like, I wish just people were a little more patient. I know that's like not, that's not going to happen, but he is good at every part of the game of golf. And by good, I mean like really, really good.
Exceptional. Yeah. Like top 20 at everything.
Yeah. So it's just, I played with him, and Lacey even pointed out, I would say that on Friday I played the best in my group tee to green, and I would say Phil was maybe, him and Xander kind of seemed like they played kind of similar. It was a little bit more sloppy than Xander played the first day, maybe. Phil, being Phil, shot 69, you know, played this great golf, but he felt like he made a lot of putt, and he just felt like he did a lot of things that like held it together. And Lacey made this point after, because she was kind of trying to hype me up and talk to me about how it looked like I was playing, you know, really well compared to, like, you know, two guys that are obviously amazing.
Right.
And then I was like, you know, Xander shot even today. And she goes, yeah. She's like, I can't believe how like easy he makes it look, because it didn't seem like he was doing anything. And he shot even, you know. It's just like, man, the kid is just, I'm obviously biased. I'm a friend of his, and I'm a huge fan of his, but like, there will be a time, in my opinion, where he's going to win one of these things, and he's going to be the guy similar to Rahm, where it's like, man, it could get scary for a bit, like, of how many he might be able to win. And I'm talking majors or PGA Tour events, you know, like both. I don't like when people, you know, say, oh, this guy's going to rattle off 3-4 majors. I think that's really hard to do. Dustin's won two, and he's
especially
as good
now
as a golfer as anybody. Right. Especially now. But there is, he's that guy. He's like, man, when he starts like winning these things, I think, you know, especially just in the regular PGA Tour events, it could start coming multiple times a year. And you wouldn't even be shocked at when he does it. Cause it's just, it looks like so simple. So I just wanted to give him a shout out. He's really good. But also speaking on Rom, I mean, we've talked about on this podcast enough times, but like, he's incredible. Like, he just truly is incredible. It's amazing. He hasn't won more. And that sounds silly. Cause you know, he's only 26 and he's won plenty, but I mean, the guy is good at, I mean, he's just like Xander in that way. Just really good at absolutely every part of golf, and he smashes it too. And it's just, when he gets in that zone, like he was at Torrey, it does feel kind of like, you know, how will this guy even mess up? Like, he just has it all. He did the thing on 16 that I've talked about on this. He played the cut, like, you know, all day. And then he gets on 16 and hits like the tightest, prettiest draw you've ever seen right to the middle of the green. And you're like, man, like, it shouldn't be that easy.
Right. This is when it's supposed to be nerve wracking. Yeah. You had a line one time. You were talking about, you know, people that miss cuts by one shot. And you said, you know, if you do it a lot, it's not a coincidence. What we haven't seen a lot of lately is kind of the go out and get it wins in majors, you know, the Tiger like putts and the moments, and I got a birdie here, or I got a birdie the last two. It just doesn't seem like it, you know. It goes back to that whole thing on Saturdays where people always go, you know, if Rory shoots 63, and you go, well, yeah, but like, that never happens, like, ever. It never happens. It's not like it never happens, but once a year. It like has happened once in the history of major championship golf, you know, to birdie 17 and 18. I mean, to do that deep dive into the players that have done it, and it's Nicholas Hogan, Tom Watson, and now John Rahm to do it in a U.S. Open. Like, that never, ever happens. And for him to make those two putts, it's more, I want your thoughts on this, but it's more than a good read and a good putt, right? It's something internal to be able to find a way to make those two putts in those moments. And I feel like we've kind of known Rahm was that guy for a while, and to finally see it in one of these was pretty cool to witness, because it's such a rare thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, what I was always impressed by with Tiger is, okay, so if you look at a match play event where you get to see a lot more, when somebody has like 18 feet to continue the match, they almost always run it like 10 feet by.
Right.
Miss, right. Cause it's like, don't leave it short. Tiger's putts always had great speed. And I might be lying here, but either I read about it in a book or I heard in an interview, but he talked about how he, you know, treated all the putts kind of like the same, maybe adjusted the read a little bit to give it a little more pop, but he was hitting the putts very similar speed. And that takes two things. That takes confidence in yourself, knowing that you're still going to hit a good putt and you're not going to worry about it being short or something. And second, it takes a lot of nerve, because to hit putts with great speed under a lot of pressure, that's, you know, that's tough. Like, it's easy to kind of wave at it or hammer it just out of a pure, you know, flinchy kind of like nervous, your hands are shaking type thing. Rahm's two putts he made required perfect speed.
Perfect. Like, perfect.
Perfect. And he did it. And I think, again, I think it shows you both those things. I think he showed that he understood in that moment he was just going to hit two good putts and so be it if it doesn't go in. And second, I think he showed how much his nerve is in check under the gun. And obviously, I mean, he's just that dude. He's just a baller.
I like he's just that dude, because I think that's kind of what we're seeing from him. And I do. Everybody pump the brakes on to, and you just said it about Xander. Everybody pump the brakes on. He's going to win five majors. I mean, nobody's done that yet in this generation. So, it's very easy to get excited about that. I mean, when Rory started winning majors, we thought he was going to win 10. You know, when Sergio lost to Tiger in 99, we thought he'd win 10. It's going to be very hard to win three. So as impressive as that was, you know, I mean, we could see John Rahm go 3, 4, 5 years without another major. I would say, I think we probably both think it'll happen sooner than that. But I think we see moments now in sport, and especially in golf, and we think it's going to predict the future as opposed to appreciating the present. And this was an unbelievable present moment. He was great this week at a course he loves in a city he calls his favorite city in the world. I loved his press conference, Max, on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it was. I thought he had an unbelievable attitude. It just, you know, we talk so much about people, he bring up his attitude all the time. And you made it a point on this podcast a lot. It's like, who cares what he does? He's one of the best top three ranked players in the world. Now, obviously, he's number one in the world, but I just thought, you know, like a sense of humor about it, about everything that will happen at the memorial and defending the PGA Tour. It just seemed like he was like, I'm kind of fine with what happened, you know? And I thought that was a cool thing to hear. And then obviously to see kind of what happened over the weekend and then the win on Sunday was great. Louis, my pick before the week, I always say it's my pick that's not my podcast co-host. I had Louis as kind of my pick. golly, Max, he was right there, dude. You know, I mean, he got beat. You know, John Rahm beat him, but he was right there. And then he gets on 18 and he's got to make eagle and he hits it in the rough. I wanted to ask you, from somebody that obviously is out there playing that golf course, is there any way to get that on the green from the left rough like he was in?
So I thought about this a lot too, just trying to use like personal experience. I don't have nearly like, I don't have a wide range of it, but like last year in Minnesota at the 3M, I hit a bad drive and I had this shot
on 18, on 18,
three wood on 18. Yep. And I needed eagle to tie and, or to potentially tie. And I remember thinking like, you got to go for this. Like, this is your best, like this is your best bet. And then we sat there and thought about it and it just was like, man, like, this isn't 1 in 10. This is 1 in 50. Like, it feels like a 1 in 100 to 1 in 1,000 type shot that gets on the green and with the chance, or around the green with a chance to make eagle. And, you know, the other, you know, 99 or 999, attempts go in the water and now you literally have no chance. And I'm all for taking a whale at it. And I'm all for like going down and winning is the only thing that matters. I totally get that. But there is a part of this where you need to play the percentages, not of making birdie or not of not messing up. It's play your percentages of what is the best way to make eagle here. Is it,
right.
Is it to run this thing up and hopefully miss the water, or is it to make a 70-yard wedge shot? And I know that sounds crazy to people, but like, dude, like I have a pretty good chance in the realm of golf to make a 70-yard wedge shot. I have very little chance, and he had very, 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 very little chance of that ball running up and not only going into a spot where he could make eagle, but not going in the water. Like, the fairway slopes right to left, it's coming out of the rough, so now you're just assuming he's going to hit it dead nut straight out of that lie. It has to come out perfect, literally perfect, just to miss the water and miss the right rough, and then it has to be the right weight to hit the green. And even if he misses the green, like, the best place to leave it would have been the upslope of that right bunker where Rahm was in, but we saw Rahm's ball rolled onto the downslope and he couldn't even aim at the pin. So it's like they did a good job. You could hear them talking, him and his caddy, and he kept telling his caddy, and you could tell he wanted to go for it, but he's like, dude, this ball goes in the water like every time. Like, right. So now what do I do? I'd rather try to make a 70-yard wedge shot. Like, that, you have a chance from there. I mean, we've seen it. Zach Johnson did it against Tiger at the Sherwood event. And like, you see it
JT
here
in Mexico City, you know, I mean, JT made it.
Like, yep. You have to just give yourself a chance. Now, if it was like, obviously a good lie and whatnot, I think he takes it on. And if he doesn't, then I think it's a different conversation. Then it's like, it kind of feels more protective than it was like, let's win this thing. But in this case, dude, like, that shot is a joke. Like, I wish they would have kind of showed a little bit better how small the run up is. Like, and you know, your penalty for missing the run up. No one plays the run up shot to that green. You play the long one that like flies to the front half and hopefully stops. And if not, runs the back edge, or maybe you have a chance to chip it in. This was not that case. This was, hey, this ball's going in the water like almost every time. And I can't really do anything to protect that. And if I bail on it and go right, it's not like I have any easier chance with a 50-yard wedge shot from the rough to make it. I'd rather have a number. And it's like, it sucks, you know, but that's golf. When you have to make an eagle, you can't just force it. Like, that's not how it works. You gotta still play somewhat percentage. And I thought he did. And you could tell it bothered him that he had to lay up, but he was being honest. Okay, he's like, every time I hit this ball, I'm just like, it's going to run left into the water. And like, now it's over. So it's like, let's get up there and try. I don't think he was playing for the second place. I don't think he was protecting anything. I just think he just had no freaking chance of that working out unless you get like five of the best bounces in the world.
Now, here was the thing. I wrote this on Twitter, and I mean, I'm not standing back there, you know, in the fairway looking at it, but could he have hit kind of a knuckler into the greenside bunker and then had a chance to hold that? And that you mentioned the
Rahm
shot.
That would have been my best bet. Yeah. I just don't think the lie was good enough to know that was going to go, because that's the thing is you needed that ball for him to make eagle. He would have needed that ball in like the left side of that bunker. As you saw, like Rahm got a pretty shitty bounce.
It landed on grass and kicked right. Yep.
Yeah. And it was like, oh man, like, cause now you're in a like a legitimately bad spot. So yeah, like you could, he could aim to the bunker. The problem is then is it still can come out a little left and then it runs into the water.
Right.
And then also it could come, if it comes out right now, you are pretty short sighted with like a 30 yard rough, like a shot of the US Open rough. So it's like, again, like I just think he would have the same chance of going for the green, I guess, as that bunker. So it's just like, it's hard. It's really hard to say. Like it's just, I think overall your best bet there, and this is how you have to play golf, your best bet to make eagle was to make the wedge. And I think he just played it right. It's just, you know, we're so used to people being gung-ho and going for it, whatever, but it's like, man, sometimes your only play to make eagle is actually to make a wedge shot. It's like, that was that case.
It was a fun week. I mean, I thought it was a very entertaining weekend, and that's all we wanted, these major championships. So, I mean, it came down to it. There was about 50 people, it seemed like, on Sunday that had a chance to win. I was convinced. Awesome. I think I was convinced four different names were going to win it at one point. I thought Koepka was going to post five. I thought that was going to be tough to catch. Then I thought Harris English had a really good chance at three, you know, before kind of Rahm went on that crazy run. Then I thought Louis was going to win. It's just like, who is going to win it? And I just kept going through the names after names. And obviously it landed at Rahm, who seemed like the guy that should have been. And also, I'll say this last thing on it. It seemed like Rahm had about his B plus game, which is probably scary. Like, it didn't seem like he played 8+ golf the whole week, you know, and still was able to win that US Open. So, you know, I think that's a kind of a nod to his abilities, is that maybe he didn't have it the whole week and was still able to pull that out, which is pretty impressive. I want to ask you about greens books and this whole banning them, and it looks like it's going to happen. And what is kind of the consensus, or what are the thoughts around the tour about them? Like, what are the players saying? Is there an excitement about this? Are there people that are really bummed about it?
Mostly every player I've talked to, I'll say every player I've talked to is excited about it. I don't think anybody.
Every player. Wow.
This is every player I've talked to. So okay. That's not a ton, but everyone I've talked to, is excited about it. I think everyone's pretty set on, like, there's not really, it doesn't seem like a aspect, like a skill of golf to be able to have that book. So I'm glad. I'm personally glad they're going away.
Do you use them?
Yeah, Joe uses a lot more than I do. It like confirms reads. We had one at Tampa where I thought it was going a little to the right. Joe thought it was going a little to the left. And when we looked at the book, it was dead straight. And I made it 20 feet or so. And he told me, he goes, I'm never not buying this again, because that just literally made us a whole stroke. And at the end of the day, you know, get sixth, that would have been ninth. And that's, you know, a ton of money. So yeah. It's like, what, you know, it's dumb. It should be a skill, in my opinion. And this is just too, the problem is I don't know how you control the rules. I don't really get it. Cause I guess technically speaking, people could still go back through and look at the pins the next day and kind of somewhat chart it in their mind or whatever in their notes. I don't get all the rules to it, but in general, I think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think golf should be all math. When it comes to putting, I think there should be some art to it. I just think, you know, you can make it as math as you can, you know, like aim point or whatever. Like, I think all that's fine, but you should have to go do that. You shouldn't just get to pace off. You have 9 feet from the front, and a pace to the left means it's a 2% slope and it's uphill a percent. So we're going to play it a ball out. Like, I do feel like at least you should have to, you know, straddle the line and feel it with your feet, as people have practiced before the greens books were super popular. And I think that would be one thing, but. You know, it's not a major deal. I don't think it's making anybody like significantly better, but I just think that it just doesn't feel right. It feels kind of dirty.
I mean, I think that seems to be the consensus. I think that's why people are fired up about it. You know, it's just, it's going to, that first of all, you lose the visuals of the pulling out the book and just staring at the book on the greens,
yeah.
Which is just, I mean, again, I always think about what is somebody thinking that's not a golfer that turns the golf on. And if they see that, they're probably thinking, what's in that? You know, what are they looking for? And,
yeah.
And so to bring back kind of surveying the greens and stuff. You're at the Travelers this week. It's exciting. I heard on the Shotgun Start that they were pitching you to do, you're doing something with Gillette or something. They were pitching you around to Shotgun Start. I need you to go on that podcast and just be like, just only bring up our podcast the entire time you're a guest on their podcast. But you've got a busy week here, and I know you like this golf course a lot.
Yeah, I got to do a bunch of the Gillette stuff this afternoon.
Have you shaved? Like you have, I feel like you still look furry.
No, it's actually for their, it's for their deodorant, their roll-on deodorant. Yeah, no sweat stains, man. Again, when they approached me about it, I was like, you know me, right? Like, I don't know if you guys have a razor or a shaver that is strong.
Do you have seven blades? Do you have 10 blades? Yeah.
So they're smart. We're doing it for perspiration. Perfect. So I could always use help with that. But yeah, Travelers, I love. I actually didn't play a practice round this week, so we're going to see how that goes.
Nice.
I played Sleepy Hollow yesterday. Rad, one of the coolest courses I've ever been to, in the rain. And then today, I thought I was going to be in the pro-am, and I ended up being first alternate, so I ended up having to hang around the course all day and practice. I actually had an awesome day, considering not getting in. I mean, spent like 6 hours practicing, felt really like it was fun, good to grind, 5 hours practicing. So it was a good grind. It's fun. But yeah, haven't done this in a while, but I played here a bunch, never really had a ton of success, although I feel like the course fits me really well, and the greens are how I like them, and the layout's how I like it. So I've just had some weird, I remember last year I putted horrible the first day, and they kind of killed me for the tournament. I think I lost like 4 strokes on the greens the first day. So I don't predict that coming again. So I'm excited to finally, you know, hopefully play well here, because I do really like the golf course. It has a lot of the things I like about just course in general. It has a lot of runoffs around the greens that are short grass. It's a mix of fun, gettable holes with some risk. Has one of the better finishes on tour. So I really enjoy the Travelers. They also do a great job with just, you know, their whole, I guess, coordination of the tournament. I think it always goes really well.
Are practice rounds overrated, Max? I mean, is this a silly take? Is that fair? I mean, you guys are like
100% overrated.
I play golf with you, and you make 9 birdies. It's like you've never seen golf courses before. I mean, like, what'd you shoot at Sleepy? Like, you shoot 4 or 5 under probably?
I didn't play well at Sleepy. Dude, it is so hard to putt there. My God. I think the longest putt our group made was like an 8-footer.
I haven't played there. I've only played there once, and it was like super wintery. So who'd you play with? You play with Joe and some guys? Did Joe go?
Joe and, yeah, my buddy Jason and Pat, him and his dad are members. And they took me out. It was honestly really fun. You know, sometimes on a 3-week stretch, or when we've been playing a lot of golf, I haven't had 2 weeks off in a while. It's pretty good to go out and actually just have like a fun time.
Right.
And on the golf course still. So it's like cool to kind of like recharge almost, but still be practicing and playing. But yeah, practice rounds in general, like, I mean, people take them real serious. I would say, you know, like when I haven't been to the course a lot, like you chart a lot of stuff and you take a lot of notes, but like this golf course I've played so many times, I've played it in every condition. I mean, you're kind of getting the feel of the speed of the greens and maybe hitting some of the pitch shots or shots to see how far it goes. But nowadays with all the technology we have, like I know how far the ball goes here. I know where to leave it around the greens. And I think that's the most important part. And I know what clubs I'm going to hit off every tee. So I'm not going to show up to a hole and have to be like, oh, is this driver 3-wood or, you know, it's just like, no, I know what I'm going to hit. So in that regard, yeah, I don't typically obviously take off the practice round day. I mean, I still like to be out there but this was a weird one. I'd already set up Sleepy and I didn't want to back out of that. And then I thought I would be in the pro-am and ended up being a first alternate. So, I mean, it's just random, but we'll see how it goes. It really shouldn't matter either way. So if I played great, I wouldn't like look at it as, oh, I should never play practice rounds. And if I play bad, I'm not going to look at it as, oh, it's because I didn't play a practice round. I mean, I know exactly my game plan for tomorrow. You know, I knew it leaving the golf course last year when we played. So
I have a game plan. You should write this down if you got a pen with you. Make a lot of birdies, make a lot of eagles.
Try not to make bogeys
and try not to make doubles. I would say that'd be the thing. You know, we're working on this Get a Grip store that's going to have a lot more stuff, and it's going to be way more updated, and we're going to have kind of 200 shirt runs and be done with them. I'm going to work on something about practice rounds being overrated. I'll send it to you before we approve it, because I feel like we're on to something here. I think we really are. Like, I've got a Connecticut Open qualifier on Monday. I don't even know which course I'm playing. Like, I had no idea. Now, I'm way worse at golf than you, but you get on a tee and you got to hit a shot. And like, if you've played the hole 100 times or never played it before, it's probably similar. So We shall see how that goes. I'll see how my my no practice rounds works as well. I've got a few flights for you, Max, if you want me to start.
Hit me. What you got?
So I had a bad idea of the week. Dumb idea, if you will. So was working live from on a Tuesday, you know, got out of there about noon, decided to go on a run on the beach. You know, I brought my running shoes and, I go down to where the hang gliding thing is. And there's these like super steep kind of crazy stairs. I go down there and I start running and I'm just seeing like so many naked men, like older men.
Oh, you went to nude beach.
Didn't know it was a nude beach.
Welcome.
I have a rule on nude beaches that the only naked people are people you don't want to see naked. And, just went on a run and it was just a whole bunch of penises everywhere, just on both sides of me as I was running. So I would say it wasn't my best decision of the week. I mean, listen, I have absolutely no issue if you want to be naked on a beach. I just would have liked to be more prepared, you know, for that experience. So that was probably my bad idea of the week.
I like that. What else you got?
When you're not ready to see,
I think I got it.
When you're not ready to see naked people, it's very jarring when you see someone naked.
It's incredibly jarring. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, you don't just happen upon like you don't just go into an airport and there's somebody walking around with like no shirt on. Like that doesn't happen. So
yeah,
you would like to at least be a little bit prepared. Best thing I heard this week, I got a good one. I was leaving Torrey on Sunday in a golf cart. And I had some random person was driving by in a cart and they said, "Great work this week, Simon."
Nice. That's a kind of a classy name.
I've been called Sean a lot of my life. Like, I mean, I've been called Sean on air before. Simon is a first. Never been called Simon. So that was a first for me. So
you think they were trying to do the Brooksy thing to you?
Maybe. Is there a Simon, like an up and coming Simon in golf media
maybe
I don't know?
Brandel's been out on you and he's trying to start a beef and Simon was his like other kind of, it's kind of like an elite, you know, elitist type name, like Brandel. Like it's just like you sound smart with that name, so maybe he was trying to like do a little play on
back in the Daily Show heyday. There was that Stephen versus Stephen segment they had with Stephen Colbert and Steve Carell. Maybe I need to be Brandel versus Simon and that'll be our back and forth yelling segment we could do. Which actually might work. That might play. I like that thought though. That's very smart. Best shot I saw this week was the Bubba driver off the deck at the ninth. Was just quintessential
so
Bubba. It was just Bubba. It was just. Okay, I think you've talked about this, but when you played with Bubba at Wingfoot last year, can you tell people how impressive he is in person when you play with him?
Yeah, it's dumb. Like we talk about talent or whatever, like all the time, and like he is. I would say like. I guess it's hard to quantify, but he can do anything. Like it's pretty incredible. He tells Ted Scott, his caddy, he tries to hit in the first cut on every hole. And I think he hit it like five times in the price round at Wingfoot. He also, hits a big ass cut with his driver and we get up onto eight and you have to draw it. And he hits this most beautiful, absolutely bomb draw. And he told Teddy how he's been like, working on it at home, and Ted's like, dude, he doesn't practice at home. He's not been working on this, so he just decides to do it. And you're like, dude, this is just not fair.
I mean, he fired that second round, and I was like, man, Bubba might do something. And unfortunately, you know, the weekend came. U.S. Opens have never been super kind to Bubba Watson, but the driver off the deck at nine was so dirty. Do you have any flights?
I just have one before I go. The Feel Good Friday, and it's my own kind of. I'm doing a donation. I do it every year to the Alzheimer's Association and to St. Jude. I typically just do it 1 week here. I'm going to do it for like a 3 week run this week at Travelers, next week at the Rocket Mortgage, and then culminating at the WGC in Memphis because that is the St. Jude golf tournament and it's where St. Jude is based. I just kind of ask people if you want to, whether you do or don't, I'm still going to do it. If you want to follow along with my rounds, donate to birdies and eagles. I have had a couple people say that they're just going to donate on their own for their own birdies and eagles or even just pars or fairways hit, I've read. So that's really cool. So I always appreciate how supportive people are and helping. Dollar amount doesn't matter. Just as long as you're helping out, it's great. Hopefully I'll make a ton of birdies. I've had a good year, so I feel like I want to make it three tournaments and maximize it. as much as we can, because these are two that, that mean a lot to me. I know they mean a lot to other people as well. So, you know, just hopefully other people can get on board. Shane, I appreciate you. You tweet about it and you're on board. So it's fun. Again, if you follow along with golf, it's cool to, even if you just want to pick your own favorite golfer to kind of follow along with and keep track of, I'll keep posting. But if you want to do it with me, you know, obviously just at the end of each week, I'll tweet about it, or you can just follow along on the app. And again, it'll end in Memphis, but it's all for a good cause. And it's, just kind of a fun way to make, golf a little bit, you know, kind of give it a little bit of a bigger purpose. And again, if you play some golf at home, if you want to donate on your own, you know, if you make birdies or if you make pars or whatever you want to do, just, you know, keep tally and then send it in at the end. It'd be awesome.
Here's what we'll do too. Just to give you just a slight more reason to do this outside of just, you know, being a good person and donating money to a good cause. If you donate at any capacity, your own birdies, Max's birdie, Eagles, whatever you do, if you DM the @GetAGripPod Instagram account, just a receipt of your donations, I will randomly pick somebody. We'll send you a Get a Grip goodie bag, a hat, some koozies, some tees. Max and I will sign something. I think me signing it will actually devalue it, but we'll combine and sign something. And, yeah. And we'll figure something out, but we'll send a little gift bag out to somebody. We'll pick a random person that does
Thank
that. So DM, @GetAGripPod is our Instagram account, and follow it as well. You should follow as well, but, do that, and we'll pick a random person after the 3 week stretch and send out a little Get a Grip gift bag of sorts with some autograph stuff and everything like that. Maybe we'll throw in some golf balls as well. We have some vodka. I could throw some vodka in there, depending on if you're 21 or not. You get Rapsodo, you get vodka, you get Titleist. We'll throw 1 foot Joy shoe in there. You know, we'll just make it really awesome. Well, hey, have a great week, Max. Good luck with the no practice rounds. I hope it works out. Excited to watch. Hey, I had one last question before we go. If the British Open or the RNA, I guess, called you tomorrow and they said, hey, Max, we're big fans, we want to put you with Bryson and Brooks on Thursday, Friday, would you say yay or nay?
Oh, hell yeah. That's
You'd say yes. I love right it. There. I love yeah. it. That's that would be that. Would
In the
be
meantime,
good.
I'm playing with my not so random playing partner Jason Duffner this week for like the 15th time. Oh, I got to shout him out. CVS baby pointed out. He goes Duffner again, and I'm like, yeah.
So who are you with? Who are you with Thursday, Friday? Duffner and who?
Duffner and Satoshi Kodaira. There won't be a ton of talking because Satoshi speaks Japanese and Duffner doesn't speak a whole lot.
Arigato. Arigato gozaimasu. That's all you got to say. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, that'll be fun. I mean, hey, listen, you had to enjoy playing with. Was playing with Phil fun, or was he like really locked in? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, the fans are hilarious. It's a little banter.
Is it too much?
They're just yelling, activate your thumbs and nice cast like all day. But no, he's great. I mean, he's phenomenal to play with.
I can only imagine. Awesome. Everybody have a great week. Watch Max at the Travelers. Donate if you can. Like I said, make sure you send that in to the Get a Grip Pod. We have a store coming out very soon, which is going to have a ton of merch and hats and shirts and sweatshirts and koozies and tees and all sorts of stuff in one place to make it easier. We'll obviously update you guys when that is live, but I've got some pretty cool stuff, Max, and over the last couple of days you'll be a fan of. But appreciate you guys listening as always, and we will check back next week.
Thanks, Shane. That sounds awesome. Can't wait. And even if you're just using the handshake emoji, still please wash your hands.
Wash them. Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.